how would you define justice? How would you define justice? I want you to think about it for 8 seconds, and then I will accept your brilliant answers. How would you define justice? That is a big word around Blue Water Mission, so I think probably a lot of you have thought about it quite a bit. How would you define justice? All right, who's got it? Tell me. Yes, lovely Chinese woman in the front row.
It just is.
It just is. That is. You are lucky you're cute. That's all I'm going to say about that. All right, who else? Other brilliant answers. Yeah, right. Accountability. Oh, that's interesting. Justice is accountability. Yeah, presumably accountability towards some standard or responsibility, right? So that's good. That has to do with justice some way, probably. Yeah, yeah, you can come. An eye for an eye. Yeah, that's actually a biblical phrase, an eye for an eye, which is Old Testament teaching about justice. It's an interesting teaching. You know what an eye for an eye means? It means only an eye for an eye, because in those days, the rule of justice and retribution was, if you take out my eye, I will lop off your head. And so God said, no, keep it proportional. That's actually what that teaching is about, an eye for an eye. Yeah. So that's interesting. I love it. You guys are going right for the vengeance this morning. That's good. Albert.
Doing the right thing regardless of personal reward or sacrifice.
Ah, okay. Doing the right thing regardless of personal reward or sacrifice, right? So there's something in there that has to do with integrity and honesty. That's interesting. Yeah, Vern. Our justice minister. So like everybody should lean in and pay attention because this is just going to change your life.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm giving a justice ministry answer. But it depends if you include grace in there or not, because it could mean just getting what you deserve.
Ah.
One definition of justice.
So Vern is playing with the tension. Like, one definition of justice could be getting what you deserve. But then she threw in the word grace. So we think that grace probably figures in there somewhere. Getting good things you don't necessarily deserve can be just in a different way. And she shrugs. So our justice minister just shrugs. I don't know. I mean, that's like, you know, accountability, grace, something like that. Right? Which is actually a very provocative answer, right? And that's a great conversation starter. These are great. What else? Yeah. Balance in all the virtues. All right, we're doing this sermon series on all the cardinal virtues. And so Paul intuits like, well, it's probably when they're all at play and not just some of them, and that feels just, balanced, good. Yeah, very provocative stuff. Who else? Yeah, Mind.
Restoring equitability.
Yeah, the definition like that, unfortunately, you have to follow up with, what's equitability? Playing the synonym game. Yeah, what is equitability in terms of what? But it points you in a direction. It's like there's an equality that is involved somewhere. There's no partiality or there shouldn't be at play. So yeah, that's definitely part of it. What else? For some, it's getting back, Mike says, looking at me very pointedly for some reason.
Two words, dunk tank.
If you didn't hear that, Mike says two words, dunk tank. He knows what's coming up at the fall festival. Connor. Yeah, I'm going to change this morning's topic to mercy. I think your answers are healthy and representative because they're kind of they play with different things, right? There's accountability, but there's grace, right? There's honor, there's integrity, but there's also the idea of equitability and fairness and all sorts of things at play. And what's interesting to me about this virtue we call justice is that it's really multifaceted. It's a gem with lots of different facets on it. And if you just pick one out, it kind of crumbles. There are all sorts of ways to think about it. I love justice. I love the word justice. Mostly what I love is what you might call restorative justice. And I think a lot of Blue Water people are like that. It's like we like taking a bad situation or people who are stuck in a bad situation, and we bring grace, we bring goodness, we bring health, we bring empowerment, we bring generosity to it, and that feels restorative. The word restorative or restore in the Bible is usually represented by the Greek word sozo, which is how it's the word that we typically translate salvation. And that word for salvation literally means to restore. And Christians are kind of into salvation. We're kind of into restoration. We want to be restorative, to bring health where there is sickness, as Jesus said. So there's restorative justice. There's also protective justice. We got into a conversation about justice at our Ohana group on Wednesday night, and we were talking about all the different facets. And John Roberts was there. He leads one of our justice houses, one of our community houses. He just takes in people in tough situations and known for being a place of generosity and inclusivity, such that people just bring whomever they find to the justice house. Somebody brought some random guy they had just met to one of the community house dinners there. And the guy leaned into John and said, "Just so you know, I'm carrying a knife in case things get bad." And then John exercised what you might call protective justice, which is, I have a lot of vulnerable, injured people and children in this house right now. You're not coming in, right? So that was kind of, you know, a bulwark, maybe not as inclusive as generous, but obviously important and just in a different way. So there's restorative justice, there's protective justice, and then there's just sort of law and order justice, or what you might call legal justice, right? Which is like, there are standards, and we need to be held accountable to them. Why? Well, because if we're not held accountable to good standards, we tend to get very unhealthy, both individually and socially, and nobody's perfect, and we all need accountability in some fashion. All these things are in play. Sometimes they even feel as if they're in tension, and we have to do all of them if we want mature justice. So we're in the sermon series on maturity, the biblical definition of maturity, as we talked about the first week of the sermon series, has to do with something like completeness or wholeness, right? Sometimes we think of maturity in terms of intensity or extremity, but the Bible talks about it in terms of completeness. If you're going to be a mature person, you have to be a complete person in all respects. That's kind of how the Bible represents it. We talked about how Satan is a moralist. He really loves morality, Satan does. But the thing is, he is very selective about the morals he loves. Satan's trick is to get you to love one moral really, really, really hard so that you excuse yourself from paying attention to the other morals, right? And so that's his trick. He gets us to be unhelpfully, immaturely selective. I liken it to eating only spinach. Now, spinach is an incredibly healthy food. You could go a long way on spinach. More protein per calorie than steak. Did you know that? But if you only eat spinach, you will eventually get sick and die because you need other stuff in your life as well. If you are a compassionate person, that's incredibly important. But if you're only compassionate and, say, lack self-control or discipline, you're going to get sick and you're going to make other people sick as well. You need truth and love and truth. You get the idea. That's what we've been talking about. In the first week, we talked about the cardinal virtue of prudence. Prudence is the virtue that compels you to think about all of the other virtues. It's the virtue that makes you think things through as completely as possible. So that's a cardinal virtue. And last week, we talked about the cardinal virtue of temperance, which is the virtue in which you celebrate enough. Temperance is when you know what enough is and you celebrate it. You don't need more than enough. Temperance, just the right amount. And today we're going to talk about one of the seven traditional cardinal virtues called, well, justice. I am obligated to do the pop quiz again. So what individual can tell me all seven traditional Christian virtues? If you can pass this quiz, you probably get brownie points in heaven. Probably a lanai on your condo. So who's got it? All seven. Okay, Akaika, let's go. Oh, Akaika's volunteering Linza. Yeah, okay. That would be prudence, I think would probably. Okay, let's go, girl. There you go. She did it. You should be sitting in front. That's great. Okay, today we're going to talk about justice. Justice has been this huge factor in my life, as it is a huge factor at Blue Water now. But probably the first time I thought about it intensely in terms of ministry, and I was coming out of college, and I got really excited about, I think, what has come to be called colloquially social justice, just kind of large works of restorative justice in communities. That's what I got excited about. So I moved into a terribly violent ghetto near the college that I attended. It was the most violent ghetto in America, actually. And we just rented this big old house, which we could do for pennies because nobody wanted to live in this place. Me and a few friends from college moved in and pulled our money, and we rented this house, and we just took people off the street. I built a shower in my backyard where the crack addicts would come and shower and get clean and feel human, and then we'd talk to them and minister to them. We ran a soup kitchen. We did all of these really cool things and just tried to make a difference in the community. I was 21, 22 years old when I got started. It was my first community house experience, and it really changed my life, and I tell tons of stories about this era of my life. Well, it was such a powerful and unique work. Even though I was a kid and did not know what I was doing, people coming to the Lord, all sorts of miracles, that it drew attention from different places. So there was this guy that came to town and just to kind of be part of the ministry and start hanging out, and his name was Royce. And I think a lot about Royce, even though he was in some ways not a very admirable individual. So he showed up. He said, "I've sold everything that I have, and I've come here just to be part of this with you guys." This was my first conversation with him on the porch in this big house that we rented. And I know I just want to give my life to the Lord. I've only been a Christian for like 6 months or something like that. And he was in. It's like, I'm going to just live on faith, he said. And that's where it started getting weird. Like, what do you mean going to live on faith? Well, I figured I could just, I don't know, sleep in your garage or something. I was like, well, you know, that's for other people. We had literally built bunks in my garage at this point. How are you going to eat? Well, the Lord will provide. And immediately I felt like, what you're saying is, I'm going to provide from our soup kitchen. And it just went on like that, right? It's a guy that was really excited about restorative justice in this community. There was a certain romance about it for him. But he wasn't so excited about, well, the accountability part of it or the protective part of it. And it went on for a few weeks. We included him as best we could. He came as a partner. To me, he became rather a ministry target. It's like, okay, this guy needs a work of reclamation in his life. But it turned out that he was involved in some things in his personal life that was not great. And so I had this conversation with him about the fullness of justice. It's like, well, we're trying to bring health to community, but like, you know, you probably want to pursue health in your own life as well. And it was a very awkward conversation for me, but it was the first time where I really started struggling with the multifaceted nature of justice. It's like, it's been, you know, 35 years. I still remember those conversations where I struggled. The thing that I didn't like about what was going on with Royce was the abuse of generosity. It's like he loved generous justice, but he didn't like disciplined justice. And it forced me to grapple with that. It's like, well, I guess justice requires both generosity and discipline. Like, how do I express it then? You know, what should my message be to this community in this world? I think the reason I remember Royce so much is because in this world, people are selective about how they think of justice. And Royce represents that for me. They tend to pick their favorite facet of it. Right? People are really, really enthusiastic about restorative justice, but then they forget about protective justice. Or they're really excited about protective justice, you know, strong boundaries and policing and stuff like that, but they forget about restorative justice. Or maybe they're really excited about restorative justice, but they're not excited about legal justice, rules-based justice, right? They don't have any wisdom and guidelines as they pursue it. You can tell how these things crumble and fall apart. And those of us who have pursued restorative justice at Blue Water Mission have been forced to think a lot about rules and discipline and protection and all of these other things. It's a hard virtue to do in a mature way. And that refers to how we pursue justice in the community around us, and perhaps more importantly to us individuals here this morning, it refers to how we pursue justice in our own individual lives. Are we just people? Are we fair, honest, filled with integrity, and all of that stuff? Jesus spoke about justice a lot. What kind of justice did Jesus mostly speak about? I have stunned you into silence, and I'm just like 10 minutes into the sermon. Restorative? I mean, we'd say like restorative justice. Jesus spoke mostly about generosity and grace and restoration. How many think that people mostly, that Jesus mostly talked about what we would call judgment justice? You know, sort of like accountability. One person. And I think that, I mean, that's a fairly representative Blue Water answer. Being a Bible geek, I went through all Gospels and counted the number of times because I love you people. And I might have been avoiding housework, but it's not really the point. I don't feel like you're really helping my sermon this morning, sweetheart. Jesus spoke about what we would think of as like, you know, the generous side of justice, about forgiveness and mercy and grace. I went through the Gospels a total of 25 times, which is a lot of teaching. You know, he spoke about love like 15 times. And so sort of the forgiveness and the mercy and the grace and the generosity 25 times, which is a lot. Jesus spoke about judgment justice, like there will be a final judgment and, you know, God is the judge and there is a judge and stuff like that 40 times. Yeah, so he was serious about that. He didn't talk a lot about, you know, hell, which I think is a concept that people tend to misunderstand, but he talked about judgment. He talked about reckoning and he was very serious about that. He covered all the bases, is what I'm saying. And put those things together, he talked about justice 65 times in the Gospels, which is about as much as he talked about anything at all. Tons of verses that I could talk about in terms of the virtue of justice. I picked a short passage from your favorite book and mine, Leviticus. Leviticus chapter 19. We're going to read just 8 or 9 verses. We're going to read 9 through 18. Leviticus 19, 9 through 18. I'll read it in the old NIV. This is a passage that is about justice, and depending on how you translate it, the word justice or injustice will appear in it. But it's it talks about the different facets of what a just community would look like and how a just individual should behave. And the reason I selected this passage is because Jesus himself quotes from this passage in the Gospels more than once when he was referring to justice topics. Leviticus 19 was one of his big sources. Sometimes he would quote from it rather verbatim, and you could tell how it influenced his outlook on things. So Leviticus 19, I'm going to read 9 through 18, and I just want you to think about all the multifacets of justice as I read this really quickly. Here's what he says. He's talking, this is God talking through Moses to the Israelites. The Israelites are becoming a community. This is sort of community-shaping stuff that God is giving to them. God says, "When you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Do not go over your vineyard a second time or pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and the alien or the sojourner. I am the Lord your God." So what he's saying here is, it was an agricultural society. It's like, all right, landowners, when you do the harvest, make sure that you leave unharvested grain on the edges of your field, unharvested grapes, you know, on some of the ground in your vineyards, so that poor people who are hungry or travelers or sojourners who are hungry can always find scraps to eat. You know, so don't maximize. Always be generous in your work. Always have a facet of generosity in your financial life, sort of. That makes sense. That's generous. And then I like how he ends that. I am the Lord your God. In other words, you might not think that this is a good idea, or you might think that you have a better way of doing it. You might think you have a better way of providing for people. I'm God. Trust me on this. I might be smarter than you. Throws that in there. Do not steal. That sounds just. Do not lie. That's just. Do not deceive one another. Do not swear falsely by my name and so profane the name of your God. I'm the Lord. So, you know, be honest. Be honest in all your dealings. Don't take something just because you can. When you make a contract with someone, I mean, make it an honest contract. You know, if you're gonna swear, I'm watching. It's kind of what the Lord is saying there. That makes sense. Do not defraud your neighbor or rob him. Do not hold back the wages of a hired man overnight. I think what the Lord is saying is here: don't manipulate people. You know, that's just not just. It's not fair. You know, fraud is when you misrepresent something. So don't misrepresent yourself. Don't misrepresent the situation. You know when you're kind of over-exaggerating a thing for your own advantage. You know that spirit where you're like, you're selective about which facts you share, that sort of thing? Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that. And I like this one. Do not hold back the wages of a hired man overnight. This was an economy for which the working man worked for day wages. So you would go, you would help a guy, you know, plow his furrows or something like that, and then you would get paid at the end of the day for your labor. That was the deal. But there was a way in which the boss man at 4 p.m. could subtly absent himself. And so the guy had to return the next morning and ask for his wages there. Why would a guy do that? Well, maybe, you know, so he could do something nefarious with the would-be wages. Or maybe because you forced the workers to come back and help you the next day then, right? So it was a little bit manipulative. You know, it was clever. It was too clever, you know, outsmarting people. And that's a bad spirit. That's not just. Do not curse the deaf or put a stumbling block in front of the blind, but fear your God. I am the Lord. Don't be a bully. Don't be that kid in the playground in fifth grade who picks on the weak guy. That's evil, you know, and that's unjust. And you're all very, very nice people. So you've probably rarely tripped a blind person. Good job. Do not pervert justice. Well, here's the word. Do not pervert justice. Do not show partiality to the poor or favoritism to the great. but judge your neighbor fairly. This verse always reaches out and slaps me, right? Because Jesus taught us, among other things, to always, you know, prioritize the poor in your life because they're vulnerable and they have weakness and they have need. So always be thinking about them. And let's face it, there are a lot of societies that kind of don't think about the poor. In fact, it's only very, very, very recently that any society thought seriously about improving the lot of poor people. And that's only because of the influence of Christianity in the world, let me tell you. Go someplace where Christianity has not had influence and see how the poor get treated. So, you know, that's kind of a huge value of mine. At Blue Water Mission, we set aside 25% of every dollar that comes into the church. We put it into a poor fund, and we use it exclusively to help the poor, broadly defined. We do that in order to keep ourselves honest, you know, to the value of generosity and priority on the poor. And then there's this verse. It says, look, you know, when it comes time to make a decision, to solve a conflict that involves a poor person and a rich person, or if you're in a courtroom, don't show partiality to poor people. That would be unjust. Well, just reaches out and slaps me. It's like, no, I mean, you have to respect truth. Like, that's important. You stop doing that, everybody's going to be poor pretty soon. So don't show partiality to the poor or favoritism to the great. Don't pick your favorites. Don't pick your favorites and pretend that you're more virtuous because you've chosen one side over the other. Don't do that. Impartiality is an important skill for those who would be just. Anyway, that one really gets me. Judge your neighbor fairly. And there's a lot of weight on that word, fairly. You know, Jesus says, be very, very careful not to judge. Avoid judging whenever possible. And if you have to judge someone, don't reject them or shut them out because you're not God. But there will be some time in life where you just need to develop an opinion or make a decision based on justice. Two people are going to argue and you need to figure out which one is right. Well, do it according to truth, not according to fairness not according to favoritism. Which side you prefer. That's interesting. Do not go spreading slander among the people. Don't spend a lot of time on Facebook slandering or ragging on people. Don't spend a lot of time on Facebook ragging on people. There, I feel like that one hit. That's kind of what that means. Do not do anything that endangers your neighbor's life. I'm the Lord. Don't be reckless. She said, well, I didn't intend that consequence. I didn't intend that unjust thing. Yeah, but you lived in such a way that you weren't thinking very far ahead. And that's unjust. Do not hate your brother in your heart. Rebuke your neighbor frankly so that you will not share in his guilt. So don't judge someone secretly, but do nothing to help that person out of their evil. Jesus kind of quotes this one fairly directly. It's like, look, if you call your brother a fool, if you judge your brother in your heart, that's tantamount to murder, Jesus said. So he thought very much, Jesus did, about this verse. And then do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against one of your people, but here it is. Love your neighbor as yourself. I'm the Lord. I know better. And of course, everybody knows this last verse, love your neighbor as yourself. And in fact, Jesus summarized the entirety of all the law and the prophets, all the teachings in the Bible up to his point. How did he summarize it? Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And love your neighbor as yourself. It says the first command, the greatest command, is love God with all your might. And then the second greatest command is love your neighbor as yourself. Those two things are all you need to know. All you need to know. If in summary form, Jesus said. So this is a hugely important verse for Jesus. It's a really big deal. All these different kinds of justice are in here, right? There's kind of restorative justice. It's like, look, make sure that your economic system has provisions on the margins for people who are really struggling to get by. You know, leave some grain standing in the field so that poor people and immigrants have enough. Okay, that's straightforward, and I think we tend to appreciate that. Don't lie, don't steal. In other words, be honest. All right, well, that's a little different, but we can kind of say that. Treat everybody impartially, both the poor and the rich. So that one's a little bracing. It's like, ooh, you know, we really do have to respect standards, even in the midst of our generosity. All of these different facets, right? The restorative, the protective, don't live in such a way that you're a threat to your neighbors. That's the protective one. And then, you know, the legal as well. You know, you can't lie, and in a courtroom, the poor person and the rich person have exactly the same standing. All sorts of different things. And then he sums it up with this love your neighbor as yourself. It seems complex, right? Does it seem complex? How would you define justice? Well, it would take a long sentence with a lot of semicolons in it to get them all right. But here's the thing, guys, and I think it's important for us to understand this. I think we all understand it. I think it's super intuitive to pretty much every single human being on planet Earth. Justice is kind of complex and multifaceted, but it is eminently understandable to everyone. Why? Because you kind of know what goodness is. You know, if I say, hey, treat that person with fairness and goodness, it's like you've actually got no problem formulating what that's like. It's like, well, you know, I'm going to be honest. I'm going to request honesty from him. But, you know, I'm also kind of, I'm willing to give him a break from time to time, right? I mean, everybody has an intuitive appreciation for what goodness is. You follow me? Everybody does. You know what justice is. Say amen so I don't think I'm like crazy, right? Right? There is no person here that doesn't have a very strong opinion about how to be a good guy and how to be a good guy in the world. Nobody. You all know how to be generous, but set a boundary when you need to. You all know. You all know how to do it. You know, there might be complicated situations when you're like, oh, you know, I don't know exactly how to do this thing. But everybody has the idea of justice in them, right? This is where you say amen again. So.
Amen.
All right. The challenge isn't understanding justice. The challenge is applying it all the time. The challenge is that you need to apply it to everyone all the time, not just your favorites, not just the convenient people. You need to be uniform in the way that you do it. And that's super, super hard. So super easy to understand, super easy to define, hard to apply maturely, hard to apply to everyone. There's this thing that kids used to do in school called the Pledge of Allegiance. Everybody over 40, do you know it? Anybody under 25 know it? Couple. Yeah. Well, it sort of ends with liberty and
justice for all.
And that was a uniquely American contribution to world society because justice was by definition narrow before the United States happened. It's like, if you went to court, well, if you weren't a landowner in most European countries, you couldn't even be in court. In Israel, quite infamously, women weren't allowed to testify in court because you were thought to be unreliable witnesses, just too emotional. Just turn to the woman next to you and say, too emotional. Yeah. There you go. There's some restorative justice right there, yeah. Justice for all. Yeah. That's the way to be popular, guys. That's the way. Yeah, but this idea of justice for everyone, you know, and then gradually over the decades, America has gotten better at living up to their standards, but maybe still have a ways to go, yeah? But the idea is that if there's such a thing as justice, it has to be justice for all, otherwise it's immature. It has to be justice in every way, in every situation, for every person. And that's the nature of justice. That is the essential nature of justice. And that's the challenge, which is why God summarizes this passage. And Jesus would ultimately summarize all of the commandments by saying, love your neighbor as yourself, which is as universalizing a statement as he could possibly make. It's that everybody has to get the same fair shake. That's what makes you a mature person of justice, or not, as the case may be. What's more important, love your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, or love your neighbor as yourself? Which of those commandments is more important? Oh, we have all sorts of series. You guys are too clever by half. Jesus says the first one is the greatest, because if you don't love God, like, you have no foundation, and you're not going to be able to do the second one anyway. If I were to ask you this, which one is harder? Is it harder to just love God with great intensity or to love people with great intensity? Yeah, because God is, well, he has two things going for him in terms of me loving him well. One, he's perfect, so that's a thing. And two, he's not in my face every day, right? Otherwise, you know, it'd be easy for me to get impatient. Even with a perfect being, I know this for a fact. But people, right, they're in your face every day, and I'm here to tell you, brothers and sisters, people often kind of suck. Women, turn to the men next to you and say, yeah, people often kind of suck. I'm just doing my best to foment a justice community this morning. And some people suck more than others. Or they suck in ways that you find particularly objectionable, and therefore they should not get the same justice that your favorite person does. And that's really what's going on, and that's really what the commandment is about. So let's go to the application point. Always try to have one point to kind of hang your hat on. We talked about prudence in the first week. Prudence is the virtue that makes you consider all of the other virtues. As prudence makes you consider all other virtues, justice is a virtue that compels you to consider every other person. There is nobody that you're not allowed to think about. That's what justice is. There's nobody that you shouldn't be considerate of. That's really what justice is. All people in all situations. Consideration for all might be a way to say justice for all. You have to consider everyone. Everyone at all times. And that's hard because your brains are just so small. And your heart maybe even a little smaller. You know, and I include myself in that as well, of course. You have to consider the poor. Right? Because traditionally, they haven't been all that popular. You have to consider the poor in every situation, but not just the poor. That would be unjust. That would be twisted. You have to consider the righteous, right? Because you want to honor the righteous. You actually want to honor good people. Huh, how about that? So you have to consider the righteous, but not just the righteous. You have to consider the accused, but also the accuser. You have to do both, and you have to do it really well. You have to consider yourself, but not just yourself. Not just what would be convenient or excusable or, and here's the word, justifiable. Because justice, is too easily betrayed by what is justifiable. And you don't want to be a justifier, you want to be a justice bringer, and that's a different thing. So you have to consider yourself and not just yourself. You have to consider, boss and employee. You have to consider renter and also owner. You have to consider husband and wife. You have to consider mother and child. And you have to value them all. And that's what justice looks like. Our job is everyone. And if you're a mature person, your job is everyone. We're not monofaceted in the way that we do justice. We're not lawyers whose job is just to represent one favored client. We're not judges whose job is merely to represent rules and standards. That's not who we are. What we are is we are servants of God who owns everyone and everything. And so we have to represent God who has an interest in every human and every situation and every item. And that's what justice is about. So right now, I'd encourage you not to think about how to make a just society because you're part of a community, but it starts with you. Let's start with you first, right? And think about what you need to do to be mature in justice yourself. A lack of justice will make you neglect, dismiss, or minimize somebody. That's what a lack of justice will do. A lack of justice will make you ignore or minimize somebody. How you do it? So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to give the Holy Spirit 20 seconds to bring up somebody to whom you have been unjust, according to that definition. Somebody that you've been dismissive of. Somebody that you've minimized a little bit. Somebody that you've justified treating differently than other people. Does that make sense? Sometimes we say that God convicts us of certain things. I like that word convict because you hear it in a courtroom, which is supposed to be about justice. But it literally means to make victorious, convictory. So maybe the Lord will make a conviction victorious in your heart. Speak, Lord. We're just going to listen.